Summer is right around the corner, and make it your best season yet with nutritious 2-minute meals from Factor. Eating well has never been this easy. All you need to do is heat it up and enjoy, giving you more time to do what you want. Get outside instead of prepping and cooking indoors. Factor meals arrive fresh and ready to eat, perfect for any active lifestyle. I've been absolutely loving my Factor meals. I have so many options to choose from, and they all are nutritious and healthy and so easy to heat up and eat. Factor powers your day with satisfying breakfasts, on-the-go lunches, premium dinners, and guilt-free snacks and desserts. So it's easy to savor more this season because Factor meals pack in the flavor with none of the fuss. So get started at factormeals.com/barbknowsbest50off and use code barbknowsbest50off to get 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. That's code barbknowsbest50off at factormeals.com/barbknowsbest50off for 50% off plus free shipping.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. BetterHelp recently surveyed over 16,000 people and found that while 75% of people believe it's wise to seek support, only 27% of Americans are in therapy, and people stay silent to avoid being judged. BetterHelp has over 10 years of experience matching you with the right therapist, because we're all better with help. Visit BetterHelp.com/stopthestigma for their first ever State of Stigma report, the latest in mental health research.
Hey friends, welcome back to Life Happens. I'm Michelle and I'm here with my mom, Barb. Today we're talking about generational patterns, what gets passed down, even when we try to break the cycle.
Some things we see coming, others not so much.
And even with the best intentions, patterns have a way of showing up in unexpected ways.
So how do we recognize them? And more importantly, how do we respond?
Let's get into it. Hi, Mom. I'm so excited to be sitting with you again and having a really great conversation. I'm really excited about today's conversation. This is something that you and I talk about so often in our personal lives, and I think it's going to be really applicable to our viewers and to our listeners, and I can't wait. So how's it going being you today?
Hi, Michelle. It's good. I'm scared a little bit today, though. This is going to be—
You seem a little timid.
There's a lot here. We're really going to get deep today and talk about a lot of things that I think people will love to hear about, but it's a lot. And so I'm a little bit scared, not in a scared way that I don't want to be here, but just, you know, I love talking about really deep things, and it's very personal, which we are very personal in our experiences and that. So this will be a very explosive, really good episode.
Explosive.
Well, I don't know why. It just feels very energetic.
Yeah.
Really energetic.
It is.
In a very serious kind of a way, I think. I mean, we'll add some of our usual, you know, laughter or things
levity.
Like that and levity to it. But it's a serious topic. It's a very serious topic. And I think it does get talked about by millions and millions of people, you know, all the time. So.
Well, yeah, I think this is something that has the potential to affect everyone. But I think the key is whether or not we recognize it or are aware of it. And like you always say, and that we say on the show so often, awareness is key for all things. So today we want to talk about generational trauma, the light topic of generational trauma, but really how generational trauma and cycles and patterns and habits, how it impacts our relationships, how it influences our relationships, and what we can do to start to identify some of the cycles or patterns that we want to chip away at or reframe or manage or heal from so that we don't perpetuate it.
You know, and when I think of generational trauma, I didn't even know that word. I didn't even know anything
about
that.
Well, can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, it's interesting. That's why I love living in these times, because we really have such a greater understanding and people are talking about it more. But if I look back on the idea of generational trauma, I would distill it down to, as a woman, I can speak for a woman, and having a traumatic childhood and the things that I went through in my childhood of 2 alcoholic parents, you know, oldest of 5, rarely having enough money to make ends meet, and so much arguing and those kind of things in the household, and just difficulties, a lot of difficulties. When I think of that, as I grew up, you know, and became a woman, so as a young girl, I'm going through all this, and I grew up and became a woman, I remember thinking, I want to have a family and I want to have the white picket fence and all those things. But I also remember thinking, I am going to be a totally different mother than my mother was.
Can I interrupt for a second?
Yes.
I do think that's a common thought process or mindset where you have your lived experience as a child. And I think especially in your generation where it's difficult, complicated, traumatic, and you then pick up the mindset of, I won't be that. I won't be my parents. I'll be different. And
yeah.
So I think that speaks probably to a lot of our listeners.
That's why I'm saying it.
Yeah.
Actually, because I'm thinking that's it. To me, it equates to the idea that I'm going to set the intention to break generational trauma. I don't know. I've had thousands of women say to me, oh my gosh, Barb, I felt the same way when I became a mother or when I became a woman. That was one of the greatest things I said. I am not going to raise my child the same, or I'm going to be different, or I'm going to do it better. And I think that's the same. How do we do that? So if generational trauma is not something that you kind of think about in terms of what we're going to talk about today, just think about saying to yourself, I want to be a different mother than what my mother was or than what I grew up in. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. And it's very interesting to me to see how we have that intention as women who have gone through things maybe in our childhood that we wish that we hadn't or that we don't want our children to go through. And we're going to talk about today how sometimes we can have that intention and it plays out sometimes in different ways. So I'm excited to talk about what we need to do to have the courage to stay the course.
Yeah.
And what our original intention was. And that might have been, I'm going to be a different mother. I'm going to try to raise my children differently.
That's such a good point. And I love that we're starting out with that because I think it's important to note the change in generations and that in your childhood and your parents' childhood, things like healing and therapy and trauma weren't discussed or it was frowned upon to discuss your issues. I know at least in your household, it was very push things under the rug and make things seem like everything is okay. And now as we've progressed, even in this time, but even in my childhood, it was still therapy or mental health was a little more taboo. And how great now that we're living in an era where we can talk about it freely without shame. But we didn't necessarily have the language of, oh, that was a traumatic event, or that is something that's really going to impact my emotions or how I perceive the world. So I can see how you not necessarily having the language or the tools from your childhood, or it could make it tricky to then seek to break the cycles. Luckily for me, having you as my mom, you going into treatment for bulimia and learning the tools, getting into therapy in an era that it wasn't as common, and learning yoga and mindfulness and meditation, I think that's a true blessing for us and our personal journey and intention to break our generational cycles and toxic dynamics. But I say all of that to say that if you're someone listening or watching and thinking, oh my gosh, am I behind or have I done something wrong because I've never considered this? No. And it's never too late to dive into these this level of healing because it wasn't available to us. It wasn't talked about. It wasn't explained. So I just wanted to give that caveat before we dive in that, you know, this is something that, you know, is really on the surface for us at this period of time, and don't feel like you've somehow dropped the ball because you've never considered this before.
I love that, Michelle. And I think to add two more things to that, to even simplify it more, the key word that you said in all of that for me was that we didn't speak about it in my generation.
Yeah.
Just the idea, if you don't have the access to therapy or you don't necessarily have a friend that you can trust in that way, just to be able to just speak it. In my generation, you didn't even speak it. You didn't even speak it to yourself. So I had no clue what I was feeling or what I was going through. So
denial, right?
Yes. Well, not even denial. You just lived. You just kept living. It's kind of like you didn't speak it because you almost didn't want to even... you weren't allowed to, as you said. So you're right.
I think you were in denial that some things were real.
Oh, true.
No one was going to validate your experience. So probably easier to just imagine that some of these things didn't even happen
or just suck it up and go.
Yeah.
Really, pretty much. So just to speak it. And then the other thing I think if you're feeling like I don't know where to start, for me, it was really about understanding that I learned how to act this way, or I learned how to be how I was from all of the dysfunction. You know, if trauma is a really heavy word, think about it being dysfunctional and chaotic. I learned how to survive. I learned how to just keep quiet, and I learned how to keep my head down, and I learned how, okay, I can't have friends over spending the night, because with two alcoholic parents, you never knew what you're going to walk into. So I had to learn all these survival skills. And what breaking cycles or breaking generational cycles that we're talking about, or doing things differently, is we're in the process of unlearning and learning new ways. And I think that's softer.
Yeah.
For me, it's just it's more of a gentler, softer way of moving into as a mother, as a woman, and as a father listening, fathers listening. Like, it's just gentler to think, oh, I just have to unlearn what I learned from all the chaos that I grew up in.
And I know we're going to dive into some of our personal experiences and examples of the cycles that we're breaking. But even to your point that you just made about your childhood with not having sleepovers or not wanting to invite friends over because of your alcoholic parents and having that fear or uncertainty of not knowing what was going to happen, this is a light example. How that continued for us.
Oh, yes. I know what you're going to say.
No.
I love it, because it's so – it lives in me today.
It does. And you've been unlearning it. But you carried that mindset of feeling very guarded and wanting to be in control of when or if we were having people come over to the house when I was a kid. You always wanted – visits and things to be very structured and organized. You never wanted someone to just pop by unannounced or unexpected, or you always needed time to prepare or to know if someone was coming over. And I remember there was a few times, especially as I got older, when I was a teenager and, you know, I had friends who had cars and they could just pop by unannounced. There was a few times where I would say, oh, so-and-so is going to be here in a few minutes. And you would be like, you're just telling me this now?
I would freak out.
You would have a visceral reaction. And back then, I couldn't understand. I'm like, why is this such a problem? Why are you so worked up about this? And over time and in therapy and, you know, unpacking a lot of this, you explained to me this pattern and this cycle, and it makes so much sense to me. And now, as we're both adults and we're still currently living together, so I know this happened recently, actually, where I had a friend who was stopping by, and because I know how you feel about this, I said, oh my gosh, so-and-so is stopping by. I know I'm not giving you a ton of time to prep, or, you know, it's a little bit unexpected. Are you okay? And it was such a great full circle moment for us, because you're like, you know what, Michelle? That's fine, and I'm good, and I'm really excited she's stopping by, and that's going to be really great. And I said, oh my gosh, are you sure? Because I can push it back or change the date. And you were like, no, that's great. And I'm not saying or giving this example that somehow we've perfected this or that we've totally healed, but I think this is a great example of something that could be considered minor, but the impacts and the emotional effects are major, and how you can see over time. You know, I'm 39, and we've had our whole lives of toying and teasing out this dynamic, and now here we are where we've gotten to a place where we're pretty good. So, you know, I just wanted to throw that in, because I think you never know where these dysfunctional or toxic dynamics live. And sometimes they can come up in these unexpected places like this, which I, as a kid, I would have never thought about that. And I'm sure even as a young adult, young parent, you wouldn't have thought that that would have been an issue. You know, I think with trauma, sometimes we think about the big things, the really impactful, emotionally scarring things. But there's also that layer beneath of how it really weaves its way into our everyday lives.
Michelle, that is the perfect example for this whole episode. It's the perfect example for life, because it's, I did not learn how to be spontaneous.
Yeah.
I learned how to be guarded. And so it shows up. And this is why I love this example so much, is I'm 68. It still shows up. So the importance of this whole talk today is about how can you have another person in your life or how can you have your own self in your life? I mean, I love, you know, becoming your own best friend or becoming that person that you can talk to yourself. Because in that moment last week when you said that, I remember the first thing I thought is, oh my gosh, I'm not ready or I need to prepare or whatever it is. And then in that split second, before you even said anything, Mom, I can change it, I thought, it's fine, Barbara. I do talk to
myself.
You talk
to yourself.
A lot, constantly. So it's not like we're trying to get rid of things. And I think this, I would love for that to be kind of the baseline here. We're not trying to get rid of things that aren't working for us or that aren't necessarily how we want to be. But sometimes these, you know, think of trauma as the chaos I talked about or just the dysfunction. It does live in you. There are little pieces of it there that you're like, oh my gosh, haven't I outgrown that yet? So instead of beating yourself up, understanding that, I often kind of laugh at it now when these kind of things come up, like, oh yeah, that's still there, but yeah, it's not real anymore. It's not true anymore.
You don't have
and
the
minute you intercept it like that, it's like, oh, I can breathe. Yeah, that's not who I am. That's who I was. And that may come back from time to time, but mm-hmm. it's not an example or a testament to who I am. And I have the power to name who I am, which we talk about all the time on the show.
It doesn't define you.
It doesn't define who I am in this moment in time and staying present to who you are now.
And probably have been able to release some of the shame and judgment that you might feel about that. Because I know we've had lots of conversations of, why can't we be normal? Other families aren't like that. My friend's mom doesn't care when friends pop in and out. Why aren't we normal? And, you know, if you're listening only, I'm putting normal in quotes because what is normal? But we had shame and judgment and a lot of frustration about some of these dynamics that we've picked up because of the generational trauma. And what I wanted to add too, because I know we love to weave in science and statistics about these things, that how amazing that we have it now, is that there are studies and research that indicates that trauma experienced by parents and grandparents can actually influence the well-being of the subsequent generations. And so I think if you think about, you're my parent, you're my mom, but then also your parents, my grandparents, how long the lineage goes and how far back our family history really does impact. And I remember I was in a not therapy, it was more of like a life coaching class. And part of the program was to unpack some of the family traits and things like that.
Should I buckle my seatbelt for this one?
No, it's actually fine.
I'm just curious.
It's good. I think it's a little funny. And one of the parts when we were kind of going through it was, and the facilitator said very frank, she was very frank and just straightforward. She said, okay, we're going to talk about our, you know, your parents and your grandparents' trauma and dysfunctions. But just so you know, just think of it that they were cave people. And I was like, kind of almost offended at first. I was like, how dare you call my grandparents or my parents cave people? And she goes, now before you get upset, think about the tools and the resources that they had. Think about the times that they were living in. Wars, depressions, economic hardship, and of course, what we talked about at the start of this episode, not having the language and the awareness of mental health. Thinking of all of those dynamics, it makes perfect sense to me that there would be dysfunction, that there would be trauma, that there would be chaos, because those generations weren't equipped to handle these kinds of things. And so even though at first I was like, what is she talking about? I think of it often because it, in my mind at least, helps me to have perspective for past generations and how things were handled and how things played out, and also cutting a little bit of slack.
That's really interesting. I'd never heard that story
before. I didn't told you that before?
No, I love it.
Well, there
you
go.
I'm a cave woman.
You're a cave person.
Yeah, I think, Michelle, you know, in this conversation, if we can just understand that we learned how to survive, if you had any kind of chaos or trauma, or even in life. I mean, life is difficult, as we talk about. We never know what's going to come our way. We learn how to survive. So if you're in survival mode, you're going to keep doing the same thing. And that's why I think as we look at how do we break a cycle or how do we move into a place of where we really intend to want to be, like this is my intention, this is what I value, this is who I want. This is who I am. This is what I, how I want to live. This is how I want to raise my children. We have to really be focused and stay present in that piece of a huge part of our lives that we want to be, because this is who we are from the inside out, and not allow the things in the external world to derail us, because they will. And when I say not allow, you are going to get derailed, but really not taking it in as your own. And that's why I love that we are the only ones that have the power to define and name who we are. So if we can remember that, if we...
I think that has to be a book of yours. You say that often.
Because it saves my life every day when I think about if I start to slip into doubt, or I start to slip into shame, or I start to slip into guilt, or I start to slip into those things that I'm naming myself as because of something that didn't go the way that I wanted it to go, or I'm not happy with it, and how society will tell me, that's so bad, you know, you can't do that. Oh, you think that you're breaking a, you know, trauma cycle? That's really not working for you, is it? You know, kind of people can be very judgmental.
Yeah.
And we can be the most judgmental to ourselves. So I say all of that, that you've really got to be very lighthearted. And I think it's why I love studying with the Dalai Lama so much for all those years, because he's like one big happy kid sitting there.
Yeah.
And so you go on a retreat with him and he's just laughing all the time. And he's just so easy breezy with how he takes on things that maybe didn't go so well,
difficult
or things
subjects.
That, yeah, difficult subjects. So if you can adopt some kind of a little easy breezy attitude with yourself that, oh yeah, I did that, but that's not who I am. Now let me see what I need to do differently. And I think you and I have the privilege and the great ability to talk to each other about it. Speaking is everything. And I think we should, you know, looking at how can we learn to speak up in our own self-dialogue, but how can we just learn to speak up and say, hey, Michelle, this is what happened for me and this is how I feel. So it's not a reflection of you. Don't take it personally. Now, how do I look at this so that I can move forward differently? How can the behavior and the action be different instead of shaming myself? Mm-hmm. So I think that's the whole thing. This, I would love for this conversation to be one of where people will say, wow, don't be so hard on yourself, Barb.
Yeah.
You're doing a great job. You know, this is hard and this is not easy. And having the intention and knowing the values that I have for myself are going to keep me on track.
Right.
But I am going to go off track. Like, know that. Like, don't set that standard that you're never going to go off track, because you are.
Well, I think this is a perfect segue into sharing a personal experience about generational cycles and breaking generational traumas. And I think, you know, what you just said, being able to speak about it, and how did we start to, in our own personal relationship, identify that we had the intention of breaking generational cycles, and how did this come up in our relationship? Because obviously, you know, I'm not going to be a 7-year-old kid and you're going to say, hey, Michelle, let me tell you about the things that happened and what we're going to do about that. But you, like you started the episode, said you had the intention of, this is what my past was and I will not carry this into my present and into my future. And so it is fascinating to me, the mirrors that do play out in our lives, personal and collective as a family, despite the intention to break cycles. And sharing this because you can't be perfect at it. And like you said, you can't have shame or judgment if you have all the intentions and act out of good faith, and yet something still happens.
Could your daily routine be full of hormone disruptors? There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environments right now. I had no idea. They're in our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, and they all mess with our hormones. But the good news is we don't have to suffer through this anymore because of Hormone Harmony, a formula made with only herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. And here's what's cool about them. They help the body adapt to any stressors, like hormonal changes or the environment around us. Happy Mammoth is the company that created Hormone Harmony, and they're dedicated to making women's lives easier. How amazing is that? And this means that they only use science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. The biggest benefit of all of this, you can start to feel like yourself again. And this is what women mention over and over in their reviews online. And there are over 30,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code BARBKNOWSBEST at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code BARBKNOWSBEST for 15% off today. Do you remember when I talked about True Diagnostics True Age Test? Well, I took that test myself and the results absolutely blew my mind. By taking the test, I found out my biological age, which directly predicts my risk for serious diseases. And here's why that matters. Research shows that if your biological age is even 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%, which is huge and completely avoidable. The good news is nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hands. Of course, it's driven by things like lifestyle, habits, and the environment you're in, but you do still have a lot of control. I took the True Age test and I just learned so much about my health, wellness, and what I can do to be more in control of how I feel and how I'm aging. The test didn't just give me a number, it showed me how quickly my heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging, which of course was eye-opening. The best thing is the test itself is super easy and convenient. I did it from home, no doctor visit or big needles, just a quick, painless finger prick. You send that tiny sample off in a prepaid package, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll get a detailed online report about your aging and your health. Fast and hassle-free. If you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use our code BARBKNOWSBEST to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use code BARBKNOWSBEST at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you. I'm going to let you all in on a little secret. My mom and I have always been a big berry family, which means we've always had berries in the fridge, which is why I've been absolutely loving Washington Red Raspberries. They are the shortcut to delicious because Washington Red Raspberries are picked at peak ripeness and frozen within hours to lock in bright, sweet tart flavor with no added sugars or preservatives. Just the good stuff. I've been loving having these frozen berries in my freezer so I can put them in smoothies, put them in baked goods, all of the delicious stuff without all of the fuss. These berries aren't a byproduct of fresh. They're crafted specifically to be frozen, which means they're better texture, better taste, and better results in your kitchen. They're grown by passionate farmers in Washington State, and they're frozen with care to ensure the top quality and food safety. Plus, frozen fruit lasts longer, helps cut food waste, and is always ready when you are, which we absolutely love. You can find Washington Red Raspberries in the frozen fruit section of most major grocery retailers like Kroger, Meijer, Winco Foods, and Costco. And always make sure to look for the product of the U.S. on the bag. They're also featured in popular products like Smucker's Uncrustables with red raspberry filling, as well as Smucker's Raspberry Jam. So, want to learn more on where to find American frozen red raspberries plus recipe ideas and cooking tips? Head to redraz.org. That's redraz.org. You'll find participating retailers and inspiration for every meal, plus info on how those berries can go from farm to freezer with quality you can taste.
And so, can you talk about... There was a period when I was in college, when I was in my freshman year of college, where I picked up a behavior that hit very close to home to you and how you felt when you noticed it and when you recognized that I was doing it.
Yes.
Not to bury the lead.
No. Yes. I want to clarify one word though. Whenever we say can't or don't or don't allow or any of that, I just want to be clear on that. It doesn't mean that you can't. It really doesn't mean that you can't. It means you don't live there. I just want to make sure that people get that, that you're going to slip into doubt. You're going to slip into shame. You're going to slip into guilt, especially when we're talking about breaking, you know, generational traumas and all that. It is going to happen. And when I say don't live there, have the ability, start to cultivate the tools, which we are going to talk about, and the things that we do on the show all the time, to not live there, to not take it on and own it for yourself. I just, whenever we use that word and we use it, we don't mean that you can't do it. Like, oh my God, if I do it, I'm done.
Right.
It means don't
live
there.
It's not black or white.
Yeah, it's not who you are. So find a way to, oh, that shame is not real. Let me find that out. So yes. So Michelle came home from her first year at university in college. I think it was that first semester, right? You came home for Thanksgiving,
so, yes.
I think, or whatever. And we were just talking in your bedroom and you were telling me all about it and all of that. And I said, well, tell me about your friends. Tell me about the dorm. Tell me about all the things. And this is my memory of it. And you tell me if it's off in a little way, but I just remember it. And this is the lighthearted part of me. I just remember it. We're talking and you're telling me about the dorm and you would all come out into the halls of the dorms and stuff. And you said, we just would all come out in the hall of the dorms and everything. And we would order, you know, a bunch of pizzas and we'd all sit out there and we'd eat pizza. And then we'd go back to our room and throw up. That's kind of how I remember it.
Did it come out so matter of fact like that?
I don't
totally remember this conversation.
I don't exactly remember it because maybe I've made it lighthearted over the years. But I just remember you saying.
But I do know at that point I did not see anything wrong with it.
No.
My friend said,
it was matter
oh,
of fact.
We ate too much. Let's go throw it up. And I was like, this is genius.
Well, because I think possibly what preceded that conversation was you felt like you had gained weight.
Oh,
and
the
freshman
15.
I think you said to me, Mom, the freshman 15 is real.
Yes.
And so in my way of a recovering bulimic, I think when you said that to me, I'm thinking, oh, but it's okay. I mean, so what? I was trying to make it all okay I think I said, you look great, whatever I said. And so when you said that, literally I froze. And I remember thinking there was going to be a time where I shared with you that I was bulimic and that I went into treatment and that I am recovering from bulimia for all these years. And in that moment, I thought, oh, this is for you to step up, Barb. All this is going through in my head. Tell Michelle.
Yeah, because at that time I had not known.
No, because that's the other thing as a parent. You don't just unload all your stuff on your kids. And I always just trusted that there will be a time. I knew you would know eventually, and I knew that I would share all this stuff eventually with you. But there would be a time when it would be the right time for me to share my whole life story with an eating disorder. So we started talking about it, and I sat on the bedroom floor. I think I feel like it was in the bathroom, but maybe that's just a thing. And we talked about it, and I remember you being surprised. And I remember you saying, but that's not what we're doing. That's not happening for me. And I remember saying to you, I understand what you're saying and all the things that are happening for you, but just know what bulimia is. Just know what eating disorder, because I don't even know if you even
knew
the concept
anorexia.
Of eating disorders.
No, I knew about anorexia, but I don't think
there's a spectrum of eating disorders and stuff like that. So I think I just started telling you about eating disorders and my whole journey with it.
Yeah. And I will say as a kid, and I think, you know, with your history of bulimia and eating disorders and just being very controlling about food, I know that you tried really hard to not replicate that in my childhood as far as being, you know, the language these days is an almond mom of just
a what?
An almond mom. Have you heard that?
No.
It's a terminology now of just like a ultra healthy mom that's very controlling with the food that she eats or her kids eat.
Oh, okay.
You know, healthy snacks kind of thing. Anyways, you never were like that. You were very free and open with food. Of course, you wanted me to eat healthy foods and have vegetables, you know, with my meals, but I never felt the restraint or the judgment about food. And I think for me, at least in my experience, at times that went to the other end of the spectrum where maybe I didn't necessarily learn moderation or portion control or things like that because you never wanted me to feel limited or judged for food. And so I think going into college, leaving home for the first time, being in a dorm, being fully responsible for my meals, I think we had a card that had money on it at the cafeteria. You just swiped it and it was like a free reign. There was no cap on it. So you could eat as much as you wanted, basically, which is great, you know, for college kids who are mostly broke and, you know, anyways. It was a real reality check for me because I was realizing that there was no one stopping me or in control of me or guiding me with my food intake. And so that plus then, you know, going to all of the college parties and drinking cheap beer and liquor and all of that stuff, it really was a wake-up call for me because I did experience that dynamic of the freshman 15. And so towards the end of that first semester of my freshman year, when I had this friend who lived on my dorm floor say, hey, we ate a lot of pizza, you know, let's go into the bathroom and throw it up. And, you know, in the dorm, you have stalls. So we would all just be in stalls side by side doing it together, which also is a really interesting dynamic because typically eating disorders are very secretive and private. So I think for me, it also felt like this is so normal. Here we are in the bathroom as a community event almost. And in my mind at that time, I'm like, this is the solution. This is the key. And I know now after having so many conversations with you about eating disorders, it's wild to me that that was the same thought process you had when you started your bulimia.
It is amazing, Michelle. And I think I don't want to make light of the fact that it devastated me. I mean, I pulled it all together when we were talking there in your bedroom or on the floor. I walked out of that room thinking, oh my gosh, I failed. This is, if there's anything that could have ever happened, this would be it.
Like the worst thing.
The worst thing that could have ever happened. It's like, what did I do wrong? So it's why I started this whole conversation about you have to be able to combat those thoughts that aren't real. Because I think in trying to break these generational cycles or these traumas or whatever is going on, we still carry the trauma. I believe once the trauma happens, it does live in us, little bits and pieces I was talking about. So you're still carrying pieces of the trauma. So you always have to be aware, not on alert, not on high on guard or all those kind of things. But you always have to be aware. And so all the way walking down the stairs from that conversation, I'm thinking, what can I do? What can I do? Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Now the next thing, she's going to be going to treatment and this is going to ruin her life. I mean, all the things that can happen.
Catastrophizing.
Yeah. Catastrophizing for sure. So I want to share that just because similar things happen, as you just said, it doesn't mean that you failed. It doesn't mean that the cycle isn't going to be broken, but it doesn't mean that you aren't on the right track of living the life with the intention that you originally started with. And so it took me a while to work through that in my mind to still stay hopeful, you know, to still stay trustworthy to myself. I was really mistrusting myself. And to make that full cycle, I'm thinking about it now because I can feel some of the feelings of it, that trauma healing is not linear, that any kind of healing is not linear. And so that this is the progression of it. And this was looking at the silver linings that you talk about. I got a chance to tell Michelle my story, which I always was going to tell you, but this was the perfect way. It's all unfolding, Barb, in the best way possible. Don't lose faith. Don't lose hope in yourself. Don't lose that ability of that, yes, you are on the right track. You still have those good intentions and those firm intentions and those values of how you want to be as a mother, as a human, and staying present to now what's the next thing that's going to unfold and not go down a path of, I'm going to be checking you out of treatment in 3 years. You know, like that's so, this is so key because we're talking about chaos and dysfunction and trauma, which I'm going to say it again, we've learned how to survive. Now we have to unlearn survival and learn how to live.
Peace.
And how to live, how to just be in the moment living. I never knew how to live in the moment because I was always on guard.
Yeah.
So it was a really, this was a, I was able to turn this whole story around eventually, you know, nothing is overnight, of this is actually a good thing that happened. She's learned about eating disorders, which how would she ever have known about that? And
well,
I've,
I mean, we learned in school.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
it was always this mystical thing that could never happen to you.
The deep knowing about eating disorders. Yeah. You know, you get it into your head, but getting it to the heart is my belief is a whole totally different thing. And it was also a whole test for me, like, you've got this, Barb. You've got this. Keep going. You know, nothing lasts forever. Everything changes. This is going to be an example that will carry Michelle for the rest of her life. And she will not be in the same cycle that you were in.
Yeah.
Most likely. And just live in the present moment.
And I think that's an interesting, or it's an important point to make when we're talking about cycle breaking, because when we were having that conversation and I told you about the throwing up, and then you subsequently told me about your history and just educating me about bulimia and eating disorders. And, you know, I know we talked to my therapist a lot and really dived deeply into that. You know, you very easily could have spiraled and catastrophized to a point where you're like, you got to go to treatment right now. You got to nip this in the bud, you know, in a way that was an overreaction of sorts, because you might have thought, oh, I failed because look, here she is doing exactly what I did around the same time that I started doing that. And instead, you know, educating me about it, talking to my therapist about it, and being open about it, I think was the key. Because after that conversation, was that the last time I threw up? No, I still did it. But I was also very, very aware, and especially with our family history, I know we've talked about in the show with addiction, you had alcoholic parents. So you would often talk to me about being aware of our genes, and in therapy with my therapist, talking about this line in my mind and in our family of don't cross the line between having a healthy relationship with something and then engaging in addiction. And that was language that we used all the time. Have you crossed the line? And, you know, that looks different for everyone. But for me and for us, crossing the line was the pattern or the behavior not being within your control. And we talked about it with alcohol. Have you crossed the line with alcohol? And as you all know, I've discussed that, you know, I did cross that line and I don't drink anymore. But with the eating and, you know, binging and purging and my relationship with food, I think because you had given me the tools and the knowledge, I don't feel like I ever crossed that line. And so for me, even though it wasn't a perfect cycle, like that's the break where, you know, the pattern was there, but it didn't go to the full extent that, you know, you experienced. And of course, I'm not saying any of this as if me in my late 30s having a perfect relationship with food or never thinking about these things. Or even sometimes it'll pop into my mind, oh, I ate too much. Should I just go do that really quickly this one time? No, it does, of course, because I think once you do start to have these thought patterns, unfortunately, I do think they kind of live with you. But it is about the tools and the practices and the knowledge that we gain over time to, like you say so often, talk back to it.
You know, I think, Michelle, too, I want to make sure that I say that one of the greatest things out of what happened when you told me this, and I'm walking down the stairs and trying to, you know, get control of myself, is my greatest fear after realizing that, oh my gosh, you know, now how can I help Michelle, or what can I tell her, what can I do, feeling like I needed to control it at some point. Then the next greatest fear was my relapse.
Right. I didn't even think about that.
Very real. Like, I am a failure. Well, just throw it all out the window. You know, that whole throw the baby out with the bathwater, wherever that come. I don't know if your generation ever uses that, do you? Yeah, that was huge. So that put me into a very fearful, oh my gosh, you get deep into your practice of just staying present and what is real and what do you need to do in my meditation practice and my mindfulness tools and my affirmations and just really staying centered and stopping. We learn how to stop the mind. You know, I talk often that I feel like after 40 years plus of practice, I'm an expert in the mind. It is the mind that is that can be our worst enemy and our greatest ally.
Yeah.
So we have to get control of the mind. So in that moment, I was like, get control of your mind here, Barbara, because now your safety, your presence, your ability
to- recovery.
Your ability to live your life in recovery is what's utmost important right now. So I think if we can actually think of all of this idea of a generational cycle or living through trauma or chaos or dysfunction as it really is like one precious moment at a time. Mm. And we say that about life all the time, living one moment at a time.
Well, in recovery, one day at a time.
One day at a time. So I feel that you've just shared, you know, what are some ways that you feel like you've broken the cycle from all of that. And it's how it's done. Like it is really just a moment at a time. It is really digested, but it is talking about it. It is feeling free and vulnerable enough to say, this is how I feel and this is what is happening, and not taking on the burden of any kind of shame or guilt or I'm a failure. And I really do believe in society today, it is like the key to everything now, because we see so many perfect photos and perfect things on social media and all the things, and no one is perfect out there. No one has all this right, and everyone is just trying to survive. But I think in life, we don't need to just only survive. We really can thrive.
Yeah.
And we really can let go of that need to have everything just so. Like I'm learning now at 68 to be spontaneous. You know, my intention word for 2025 is fun. Mm-hmm. Like how does not a 68-year-old woman not even really know how to have fun? But it's hard for me to just let go enough to have fun. So I think it's tricky when we're looking at all these past traumas and we're looking at the chaos and we're looking at all the things, and it sounds like this is like an easy, oh, I got this.
No.
But it really is not. And it really has to do with your relationship with yourself and always putting it first. Mm-hmm. So I think in that full cycle of all of that happening, when I got to the bottom of the steps and after a long period of time, I don't know, hours maybe, it doesn't really matter the time. It's the recovery back to where I got to where, hey, wait a minute, Barb, you're the most important person in the picture right now. Your daughter's going to be fine if you're fine. So the message in all of any of this stuff is you have to take care of yourself first. You have to.
Right.
You cannot put the other person first if you are not putting yourself first.
Well, it's that whole put your mask on before.
Yeah. And I don't know if I'd ever shared that with you that, yeah, I was like, well, no. Wait a minute, Barb, your recovery is 100% the priority right now. And, you know, Michelle, you know, you love her and care for her and she's your greatest blessing in life and all the things that we say as a mother and all. But if you're not putting yourself first, all those things that we feel as a mother can't happen. They can't actually actualize themselves into reality. They just can't.
I think that's an important point, especially when you're talking about recovery or, you know, eating disorders or addictions or things like that, where it's true that your recovery is the most important thing and staying your course is the most important priority. And we hadn't actually talked about that, but I think it is important to share here because it's true. Somehow if you had started to spiral from that incident, that would have benefited no one and, you know, added to the chaos and probably perpetuated the cycle. I can only imagine I probably would have taken that on as it's my fault. And, you know, who knows what would have happened. But I think you prioritizing that is a huge piece. And I hadn't thought about how it could have triggered you back into a relapse.
And I'm also thinking about even if you're not experiencing addiction or trauma or any of that, even if it's just how can you know, people talk so much about stress and anxiety and depression, not to the level of depression where we need to seek help, but just being down and just feeling like I can't get anywhere. I believe strongly when I start feeling anxious or when I start feeling like, oh my gosh, this is too overwhelming, it's because I put too much pressure on myself. I'm trying to be perfect or I'm trying to make everyone else's life out there okay, and I'm not taking care of myself. Yeah. So I use that as example as if you start to feel the guilt, the shame, the I'm a failure, oh my gosh, how did I let this happen? How can I get control here? How can I really get back into the wheelhouse of knowing what's happening every single moment and trying to really, you know, like that tight grip? If you could just loosen up, I like the idea of, you know, trying to live life a little loose. Like back in the old days, we used to wear those kimonos or those those big dresses, those big flowy dresses, like a kimono. Yeah, like, you know, those big.
Yeah.
I think that's what I'm trying to say. There's another word
I've
for
never
it,
seen
maybe.
You wear that. So
No. It's the visual.
Super curious.
It's the visual. I picture my mother wearing one of those. Yeah. One of those anyway.
Well, you lived it's on a very farm, flowy, so it was a farm dress.
Yeah, it's a very flowy dress. So kind of it's like that balance of how can I live my life a little bit loose like that and not be so rigid and strict and take good care of myself, but also, you know, have enough boundaries and not cross the line that you were talking about. And it's that balance of always trying to find the middle path for me.
So can you explain how that's the dress? I'm just so curious.
It's just the visual, I think. It's
like
just
structure, like, but flowy?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Structure, but flowy.
I will never forget that example. Trying to find that's a first.
Trying to find that balance all the time. And I guess the leading antidote or the leading place that we always have to remember is we have to take care of ourselves first.
Yeah.
So if you're going into those places, it's not going to work. You're not, it's, you have to get out of the thought that you are too late.
Yeah.
You know, remember George Eliot, it's never too late to be what you might have been. Never too late to be what you might have been. I never forget that. It is never too late. And yeah. I'm still at this age, still, you know, being the best version of who I possibly can be with all the life experiences that we've lived and that we're living today. And we can only do that in the present moment. Yeah. So it's the tools that you and I have that we could, you know, share a few of them today, I think, that are key.
Yeah. Well, and like we say, and like so many say, healing isn't linear. And so if you're listening or watching this episode and feeling like you're behind or that you haven't taken the time to address some of these dynamics or feel like the cycles are being perpetuated, of course, like you said, it's never too late. The power is always in the present moment. So what is it that you want to dive into right now in this moment in time? And how can you do so with a loving and graceful perspective on yourself, knowing that your past is your past and not having judgment or criticism for it? And, you know, if things have been perpetuated, the awareness that we have right now is, you know, the great first step towards making a change. And really having grace with ourselves that mistakes will be made. It's not linear. I think oftentimes with healing and with breaking cycles, it's a very two steps forward, one step back kind of dynamic where you can go for so long thinking that, oh, this pattern is, we're good here, or we've really figured this out. You and I have this all the time where we say, oh, we're really good with this dynamic. We've figured this out in therapy. And then 2 months later, something will happen and it'll pop up and we're like, whoa, I guess not. And so just knowing that healing is never perfect, it's not black and white. I really believe that life is in the gray. And so if nothing else, just adopting that mindset about it and knowing that with each day, having the intention to focus on a certain thing or to have the awareness or to take the pause is a valid endeavor.
Well, and I think too, Michelle, we're quote people. I'm a quote person.
I thought you meant quote. We are quote unquote people. I was like,
No.
What does that mean?
No. I love quotes. I love reading. I love learning. You know, I believe we're here to learn and grow and become the greatest version of who we are. And so I love quotes. And so I think we could share some of the routines that we've done through this healing process. And one of the biggest ones that has affected me is Eckhart Tolle's work.
Yeah.
And, you know, his quote, the past, you know, doesn't have the power over the present moment. And then, but that's so beautiful and it sounds so wonderful. And I remember reading so many quotes and thinking about so many great teachers and mystics and masters and learning from them. But my whole thing was then, how do I do that?
Sounds nice, but how do you put it in
practice?
Yeah,
how do I actually do that? How do I not let the past have the power over me living right now in this moment? So let's share with them, with the audience, with everyone listening, what are some of the things that we do on a daily basis from your childhood and up to this day that we're still learning and growing and doing, I think that could be helpful.
Yeah. Well, certainly the power of being in the present moment, that's something that you've instilled in me for my entire life. Whether or not I knew that that was a valid practice in my childhood or not, you planted that seed very early. You talked to me about affirmations, about mantra repetition. And I know we've talked about this on the show, and it's in your book, the practice of choosing a mantra, which has roots in spiritual text or religion. Growing up in the Greek Orthodox Church, I was very connected to that as a kid. And so I picked a mantra that stemmed from that faith. And I repeated that mantra throughout the day. You taught me to repeat it if my mind was wandering. And, you know, I also now as an adult credit that to, you know, early meditation for me. Mm-hmm. And as a practice does over time, if things became stressful for me, that mantra would pop up. The phrase would pop up. It would come into play. And now as an adult, in a lot of really difficult, traumatic situations, that practice of being present with myself and repeating the mantra has been immensely helpful for me, A, to stop, you know, a negativity spiral or my thoughts from going out of control, B, to try to calm myself and to remind myself that all is well in this moment, even if it's not, and C, that in being in the present moment, that's where I have my power. And so my thoughts going back to the past or forward to the future isn't going to serve me. And so through that practice, I really have learned the power and benefit of being present.
And I think the cool thing about mantra repetition or even affirmation repetition, a big one for me right now that I'm using as an affirmation is patience attains all things. I think the cool thing about this whole practice is that, you know, it's been done for thousands and thousands of generations by all the great teachers and mystics, as I spoke about before. But the cool thing is science now has shown that a positive and a negative thought cannot exist in the mind at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I remember reading that in one of the science journals or one of the research journals and thinking, it makes sense now why that works. So if my mind is spiraling out of control, that I'm not worthy, and oh my gosh, I've already failed in this whole idea of raising my daughter the best way possible, if I start repeating an affirmation like, Barbara, all is well in this moment. Patience attains all things. This too shall pass.
Yeah.
A mantra from a great spiritual tradition. It takes you out of the negative and into the positive, which brings you back into the present moment.
Yeah.
And I think I love putting science and research together with these practices, because it's not that we need them, because we know it works because you and I have experienced it. And once you start to experience it, you'll feel it. It's that they do work. So I think that being present, having that, and I also feel like one of the things we did your whole childhood, which I'm so like, I'm like a little giddy mother right now that you're going to be.
I was hoping you would bring this up.
Like you're going to be, you know, having your brand new first time book come out this fall.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about that? Please talk about that, because it's so, it's kind of a affirmation, mm-hmm. if you want to call it that. It's kind of an affirmation that when we are when we have the right intention and we're doing the things that we know are in alignment with who it is that we are from the inside out, and we're living our lives, even though all of the things may seem like they're not working or that it's chaotic, being patient and knowing that all the things will be attained. Here you are launching this book that is really steeped in your childhood.
Yeah.
And your practices.
Thanks
for
bringing that up, Mom. So as in my childhood, part of our morning routine was that you would read from a passage from a book, a daily inspirational book, or because you are such a profound reader, you always had books that you were reading and that were inspiring you, and you would often read a passage or a phrase or an entry from a book before I would go off to school to start the day. And that was a practice that really stuck with me, because I credit that towards, again, planting the seed to us doing this now, and just knowing that no matter what else happens in your day, and you say this often, you can start your day on the right foot in a positive note, you know, in a good headspace. And so in doing that and reading these passages and phrases and words and inspiration, that was how we as a mother-daughter started the day on the right foot. And I really valued that. And as I went along in my journey and have read other books similar and kept up with that practice of being meditative in the morning and really centering myself. Yeah, I now will be releasing my book, my take on that, this fall. And so I hope that it's helpful for anyone else and to continue this good cycle that we started. See, not all cycles have to be bad. Yes. Of starting the day in a positive mindset.
I love it.
Yeah. And so to close out, first, I want to thank you for being open. You know, I always say that we mine our trauma for the show as a joke. But, you know, it's not easy to go into the past and to open up old wounds and to revisit painful moments. And so thank you for letting us go there and talk about this today, because it is emotional and vulnerable. But I think these are good examples of this. And of course, reminding everyone that this is a journey. You know, this could pop up for us next month. And if it does, we'll tackle it. And before we close, I just wanted to read this quote from Toni Morrison that I think is a really beautiful thought to end on and to think about and to visualize when we think about trauma and breaking the cycle. She says, "Some things you forget, other things you never do, but it's not. Places are still there. If a house burns down, it's gone, but the place, the picture of it stays, and not just in my re-memory, but out there in the world." And so I know it, you know, she's not directly speaking about trauma, but I think just how instances in our lives really get stored within us and having the awareness of it and knowing that we can chip away at it, I think is a really beautiful visual.
I'm emotional now. That Aww. Was really beautiful, Michelle. Yeah. I love that you shared that from Toni Morrison. I thank you, and what a privilege and honor it is to be able to have this platform and to be able to have this show, to be able to speak about these things that in our work and in, and I know the deepest desire that I have is any experience that I have, if I can pass along any kind of information or any kind of thoughts and feelings that might help other people, that's my whole mission in life. So
love it.
The fact that we can do this and be vulnerable and be safe, I thank the community and all of you for being here, because it's such a blessing for us.
Yeah. Thank you, Mom. Love you.
I love
you. And we love all of you viewers. Thanks for tuning in. Life's full of surprises, and we're so glad you're along for the ride. If you liked today's episode, make sure to like and subscribe to Life Happens wherever you listen.
And maybe share this with a friend who could use a reminder that we're all just figuring it out together. Drop your questions in the comments. We would love to hear from you.
And dear listeners, I'm happy and excited to share that you've inspired me to write a book. Dear Friend is a collection of daily love notes to bring clarity, calm, and connection. It comes out on November 4th, and I can't wait for you to read it. Be sure to sign up for my Substack to get all the latest updates.
Until next time, keep embracing the chaos, keep learning through the mess, and most importantly, keep riding the waves of life. See you next week, friends.